Let me just give you an indication of what it is I intend to do here. I'd like to look at the problem that we're dealing with, first of all, and some notion of where a solution to it might be coming from, take you through Early Modern Letters Online, the project which is now very much at the core of the Cultures of Knowledge project, its current achievements, and some of the work which is pending, which will be unveiled to the world in the next few months, the last few months of the second phase. Brief you on the cost action, which is kind of spiraling out from it, and take at least a glimpse forward to Horizon 2020. The problem that we are undertaking to solve here one way of gesturing towards the problem is to relate the communications revolution of our period to an earlier revolution in postal communications in the early modern period, which creates or at least greatly facilitates the capacity of scholars to communicate with one another, but that causes enormous problems for later scholars, which have proved effectively impossible to solve properly in the era of print communication. Cause of the problem, ironically, is a gradual improvement in communications technology. Between the 16th and the 18th century, various means of exchanging letters offered ordinary scholars increasingly efficient, accessible, and inexpensive means of exchanging letters within and beyond national boundaries. And we can kind of sketch this out via a series of maps at roughly 100 years intervals. Here we have a postal network which is only available to the upper echelons of the Habsburg dominions. Here we've got something about 100 years later emerging in France. 100 years after that, Great Britain is becoming crisscrossed with publicly accessible postal networks. And finally, about 100 years later, we see something more like the postal systems of today in this map of Germany. So this increased form of communication makes possible a virtual community created by the exchange of steadily increasing quantities of scholarly correspondence, amongst other things, which knit Europe together in unprecedented ways, fundamental, as we've long realized, to revolutionary intellectual developments of the early modern period. But the problem is that this same phenomenon, it is difficult to use this thing, the same phenomenon created a problem for subsequent generations of scholars. The problem, namely, of reassembling corpora of manuscripts deliberately scattered across and beyond entire continents. If the Republic of Letters is one of the central phenomena of the early modern European intellectual history, then we have an enormous problem in reassembling and rendering intelligible thousands, hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of discrete documents. Just to give you some idea of the scale of this problem, here's one of the correspondences that we've been working with in the center of the problem. For the project, representing the compounding of this problem by the highly disrupted circumstances of the mid-17th century. Here we have the iconic Czech intellectual, pioneering educational theorist, Janusz Comenius, who after being exiled from his native Moravia in the early years of the Thirty Years' War, spent the rest of his life wandering the length and breadth of Europe, constantly displaced from one place to another by the outbreak of new fighting. And as he moved, he exchanged letters with a generation of learned men and women, many of them likewise frequently displaced by these same conflicts. So we have people on the move exchanging letters with people on the move. And as a consequence, Comenius's letters are scattered all over Europe. Roughly only 500 letters represented here, but in 50 different collections in 35 different cities within a dozen different countries. It's taken 150 years to collect the letters we now have, and still more are constantly turning up. And here's some notion of how they're distributed. most difficulty. These are the letters to and from Comenius on the database, which is being assembled in the course of the project. One of the visualizations, incidentally, generated by the Palladio tool developed by Stanford, which I'll be saying a little bit more of later. To give you an even more daunting problem example, oops. Better way to do it. Hang on. Okay. To give you an even more intimidating example, here are more like 15,000 to 20,000 extant letters of the great German philosopher Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz. And in this case, an indefatigable surveyor of his correspondence has attempted to provide topical headings for the correspondences he had with major figures in different areas. So you add sort of the topical dimension to this, and you see how enormously problematic it is to come to terms with the content as well as the places to and from these letters are being sent. And of course, even the 20,000 letters of Leibniz's correspondence is only a small fraction of the documentation of this community as a whole. So obviously, digital technology can potentially assist every aspect of this process. Locating scattered letters, reproducing them in high resolution, publishing reproductions and descriptions in instantly accessible places, transcribing and editing the text, collecting and organizing prosopographical information on the letter writers, analyzing and visualizing the text themselves, the metadata describing them, the networks constituted by them, even to some extent the discussions taking place within them. And it's as a consequence of this that we've seen this remarkable proliferation of scholarly projects relating to using digital resources for studying early modern learned correspondence. In the course of the lifetime of this project, going on 6 years now, we've seen these constantly proliferating and getting more and more ambitious. Archives, libraries, and research projects across Europe have begun publishing web-mounted catalogs, archives, and editions of great variety, together with mostly rudimentary versions of the kind of digital tools which can explore these materials in important new ways. And here you see a list on our own website of almost 100 of these projects, and it's very difficult to keep this up to date because they keep proliferating all the time. Well, so much then for the problem. What about the solution? And we've become accustomed to the idea of early modern letters online as really a kind of large pilot project trying to work out the social and the technical aspects, the cultural and the technical aspects of the kind of scholarly social machine that Dave was talking about at the beginning. And our aim, I think, to put it in a nutshell, is to create a new intellectual network of scholars, archivists, librarians, and IT experts, which is needed to design a digital networking facility, which in turn can make possible an unprecedented coordinated assault on the problem of reconstructing the intellectual networks of the early modern period. So put in its simplest form, we need a modern international scholarly network to design a modern digital network to reconstruct the early modern international scholarly networks of the early modern period. A network, in other words, to design a network to study networks. So, catch up with myself here. So this is now central to the Cultures of Knowledge project. And at the center of that now is early modern letters online. So let me just take you through the three phases of the project. Phase one, first 4 years of the project up to 2012. We're mostly editorial project around six major correspondences with a kind of onboard digital experiment creating the nucleus of the Union Catalog. The Union Catalogue, Early Modern Letters Online, or EMLO, is designed, built, and populated in Oxford, so it's very much an in-house project. We created a user interface, as well as EMLO Edit, which is really, in many respects, the most sophisticated technology in the first phase of the project, all about allowing our own onboard editors to use digital technology to help, in this case, largely to standardize and homogenize the 50,000 plus records of Oxford's own card catalog of early modern correspondence, putting about 60,000 letters online within the fourth year of the project. We're just coming to the end now of phase two, which will actually be extended into the first quarter of next year. Now we're mostly digital project with scholarship, particularly postgraphical scholarship shaping the systems development. Although still designed and built in Oxford, the catalog is now very much being populated collaboratively. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. And our technical development has been largely about providing the technology to allow, in the third phase of the project, our user community, our contributor community, to grow exponentially. We now have a web form which allows users to input material directly into the Union Catalog. EMLO Collect, this holding area, allows them then to curate their own material behind the password word until waiting for the appropriate time to publish it within the system. And we're also developing catalog pages so that all of the substantial contributions to early modern online can be flagged up and the diverse provenance of this material properly celebrated and described. We're looking at about 40,000 records over 2 years, a smaller project over a shorter period of time, so that represents a significant increase in the rate of production. And we're now well into negotiations with the Mellon Foundation on a third phase of the project, which if we're successful, will run from the beginning of April 2015 to the end of March 2017. Here, we're looking at a system which is designed, built, and populated collaboratively. So we're moving in the direction of a highly collaborative undertaking. And we're looking primarily at means, again, of further accelerating the rate at which both large legacy data sets already created and the data being contributed by our user community can be standardized. So that's what the semi-automation of data standardization means, and also visualized. So there's a kind of input functionality on the one hand and an output functionality as well. The larger our data sets grow, the more obviously vital visualization becomes in beginning to make sense of this kind of data on the scale in this field that we really haven't come to terms with previously. So this is something you may be familiar with. The old user interface of early modern letters online. Let me just gesture in the direction of some of the new functionality we've been developing. I'd like to talk a little bit about this new web form and show you roughly how that's going to work. Gesture in the direction of this holding area, vitally important really for the future of the project, and then take you through a little bit more detail the public-facing functionality. The point about the web form is already we are to some extent beginning to semi-automate things. Here you have a very carefully considered means of ensuring that as data is inputted into the system, in this case chronological data, we maintain both the original data as marked and the series of steps needed to convert that into standardized metadata, which calendar is being used, whether the date is uncertain, inferred, or approximate, whether it falls between whether it can be inferred to fall between 2 days and all this kind of thing, as well as a notes field. We're trying to capture as much of the uncertainty and complexity of the system on the system as we possibly can. Similarly with people, although here you see also that we have type ahead drop-down menus with a view to ensuring that our users, as they're inputting data into the system, are both capturing the original form of the data, but also tagging it in terms of the standardized nomenclature so that the editorial function is greatly reduced. Likewise, in terms of places, the system is interrogating all the place names already on the system to ensure that data is entered in a standardized kind of a way. So the new holding area we call MLO Collect is very important for this purpose. We imagine, for instance, doctoral students using the system to collect their data online in the community of all the other relevant data in the system. But not, needless to say, they're going to want to hold back publishing that until they're ready to submit their dissertation, the book emerging from it, and this kind of thing, which is why one of the major technical developments of the second phase of the project is this holding area, MLO Collect, which then ports through to MLO Edit, where the data can be edited by our own project editors before being released to public users on the front-facing user interface of the project. To say a little bit about the data that we've been assembling in the course of phase two, I mean, here's a rough notion of where we're at in the project. In the next few weeks, we'll be beginning a process of releasing the very large quantity of data that we've assembled in the course of phase two. And we're kicking this off with the publication of 20,000 records from a sister project, the Circulation of Knowledge Project in The Hague, 20,000 records of correspondence on the 17th century Dutch golden age of the Republic of Letters, some of these central figures there. There's a more heterogeneous collection queued up behind it. It will be published in the first quarter of 2015. We've looked at most of the sort of major figures in the 17th century Republic of Letters and collected the great intelligence, and there's people like Hartlib, Oldenburg, Peyresc, Mersenne, and so on, and then a large collection of representative and unrepresentative figures, as well as thousands of records of early modern women's correspondence. That's what Wenlo signifies there. Further material, as it were, coming through the system behind that already, 15,000 letters from further figures already on the system. So we're looking at adding another 100,000 letters or so to the system within the next couple of years in total. So to give you a kind of visual impression of the extraordinary activity going on behind the scenes, I couldn't resist putting this together. This gives you an impression of what Miranda's needing to handle behind the scenes. Constant inflow of data from many different sources with an increasingly kind of representative gallery of figures from the early modern Republic of Letters. Next thing to show you is the revised front page of user-facing pages of the system. Can you help me with this, Lizzie, to make certain we get off to the right start? One of the reasons why we've held back publishing the data as it's come in is that we want to ensure that our users are provided with, or rather our contributors are provided with, catalog pages describing and celebrating the diverse provenance of our data. We want to become a place where users want to archive their data, and in order to do that, we have to bend over backwards to ensure that the data is properly attributed to the contributor. So here I'll give you a sort of whistle-stop tour of the new front end of early modern letters online, which when the final refinements are in place are going to be where this new data is created. You can see here standard search fields, quick search up in the top right-hand corner. Search Plus brings down a very advanced set of features in order to search on any one of the 50 different fields in our full data model. Our icons down below are means of browsing the system by people, locations, organizations, repository, and years as well. And down at the bottom, then you have just news so that regular users are constantly updated on the new catalogs which are coming through the system. If you click ahead now, after a search, you'll get, you'll get an opportunity like this where you can click several different correspondents up to 10 to also make searches on whole communities of correspondents and how they overlap with one another. If we click ahead again, this is the way the new search page is going to look roughly. The important thing is here, for instance, these facets on the left-hand column, you click on the pluses and you get a more detailed indication of the various figures thrown up by the search, both authors and recipients, the geographical origins and destinations of the letters the various catalogs are coming from, the various years in which they're dealing with. So you have an instantaneous overview of the general shape of the correspondence. Again, if you move ahead, you see here we have a typical letter record, or in fact, in this case, it's a particularly rich letter record from Mersenne to Comenius, two major figures. Dates with the calendar, if known. People, both authors, recipients, and in this case, a great many of interesting people mentioned. And again, you can link through from any record to all the information on the system on any one of those people. There's abstracts further down. In this case, this is a particularly rich record put together largely by our colleagues in the Czech Academy of Sciences in Prague, and insipid and explicit, in this case, a postscript as well. Repositories and versions provides a clear indication. In this case, we have both a copy of the letter as sent, which is in Prague, and a scribal copy of it, which is the Hartley Papers project in Sheffield, as well as two separate printed copies, one in the first edition of Comenius' correspondence, another in the edition of Mersenne's correspondence. If you click through related resources, you're taken to the transcription on the Hartley Papers project in Sheffield. This is indicative of the way in which we're using the catalog to link through to relevant resources wherever they might happen to be. There are comments and general notes for a variety of different purposes. As you can see here, we're flagging up very prominently the provenance of the record. This is aspirational at this point, but we would like to make certain that we are not being shy about the extent to which, in this case, a record has been created by teams working in three different institutions. The edit record, of course, is available only to authorized editors, but allows someone who has the proper password to immediately get into the system and make further emendations or alterations or corrections to the data. So without any kind of coding, our editors can get involved in refining this process further. I think that's most of the functionality. Oh, sorry, if you scroll back up this, you can see here as well that we have both the original an image of the original manuscript, and if you click on that, you can see a high-res image provided again by our colleagues in Prague. If we go back, we also have the text of the first edition of this correspondence in Patera's edition of Comenius' correspondence, which is out of copyright. So we are already beginning to collect as much information as we possibly can. We can host transcriptions, translations, images, links to all kinds of material and other people's websites as well. And very importantly here, there's a link to the full catalog of Tremaineus, in fact, eventually to the full catalog of Mersenne as well, and information about those two catalogs as well. In fact, you can also click to a link to the repository, just to give you an example. Here's all the material from the National Museum Library in Prague on the system. So most of the basic data fields will be linked through to searches, allowing you to navigate really very efficiently through an enormous amount of data. Moving ahead to a catalog page. This is a very, very important new development. As I say, this has been what's holding up the publication of the records that we've received to date. We want to make certain that when this goes live, the provenance of our data is perfectly clear. Provides users with a space to add biographical content details, images, links for users to find out about other resources elsewhere, and most crucially, provenance information. Partners and contributors are clearly flagged at the top, and their contributions are outlined in detail on the catalog as well, with as much prominence as we can bring to bear. I think this is crucially important. It's obviously in our interest to celebrate the diversity of origin of the data, but it's also crucially important in attracting contributions to make certain that we are acknowledging in as prominent way as we possibly can the origins of our data. And the important thing is that this is actually a web page which the data contributors themselves will be able to edit, so they can keep it up to date without burdening us with insuperable amounts of unmanageable amounts of ongoing editorial work. Citation guidelines are also going to be embedded in there to make certain that our users know how to cite not only the print publication, which in some cases are underlying some of this material, but also the digital publications as well. Is that it? Lizzie, are we come to the end of that? Just another example of a catalog page, in this case all very much in the family. So these will be going live on the system before the end of the year when we finally have all the machinery in place to start releasing our major new data sets. So we can get back to the where are we? Keep going. No. Okay. I'm not going to spend much time talking about the scholarship we've been doing in phase two. There's plenty to be said about that. It's largely been prosopographical, but I'm just going to fly through it. Basically, if we go back, no, we can't go back. We have two prosopographers working on two prosopographical problems, overlapping particularly difficult correspondence networks, Hartlib and Comenius, two figures whose correspondence networks are definitely clearly set against the backdrop of all the military disruption, displacement, and turmoil in the middle years of the 17th century. In addition, against the very complicated backdrop of the Holy Roman Empire, a particularly challenging data set for mapping the movement of correspondence, their contact with one another, very often going back decades before they finally feature in Hartlib's own correspondence. So we've been working with Tanya Gray-Jones in particular in a whole series of addressing a whole series of problems necessary to getting a collaborative, piloting a collaborative approach to assembling not only epistolary metadata on the correspondence exchanged by these figures, but also prosopographical data on their movement, on their formation, on their contact with one another. So just to fly through this, these are some of the basic categories that we're dealing with. If we look a little bit more closely at one of those categories, ecclesiastical academic activities, these are the kind of terms which tend to feature. If we want to map these in the kind of language that computers understand, well, it looks something like this. If we want to capture it initially in spreadsheet form, these are the kind of tools which our prosopographers have been dealing with. But once again, we're now moving beyond that to a prosopographical web form, which will once again allow our contributors to benefit from all the thought that's gone involved in modeling and reducing the complexity of these kind of interactions to a relatively simple and intuitive model, very well adapted to the kind of activities which are well documented for early modern intellectuals, and then providing a user-facing description of that data in something like this kind of a form. In this case, the institutions, the places, the publications or documents, and the people involved have all been highlighted in different colors. Again, all of these will be linked so that one can navigate very, very easily from epistolary data to prosopographical data, from one part of the data set to another. And even more exciting will be further phase of development in which the system itself is trained to map, to find pathways connecting people through this data, to visualize it in a variety of ways. There's a huge and extremely exciting but very open-ended project about bringing the full power of technology to bear on this problem of working out the many different levels of these constantly evolving and shifting intellectual networks of the early modern period. Looking ahead very briefly to phase three, I think the crucial thing to mention is with our basic system now in full working order, we are reducing our phase three agenda in now the second iteration of an emerging application to the Mellon Foundation around basically just three components. One is to continue to grow the catalog itself by growing the user community. We have this new functionality, the web form, which allows users to input data directly into the holding area, for instance, which hasn't really been unleashed on our community of collaborators yet. So we'll be seeing the way in which that helps foster new kinds of collaboration in phase three. But with this basic core of the system roughly in the order in which we need it, we're looking at one main set of input functionality and one main set of output functionality. And I know this won't make very much sense to most people, but basically the business of editing correspondence and prosopographical metadata involves lots and lots of research in order to furnish oneself with the data necessary to decide whether this person in one name form, for instance, is identical to another person with a different form of their name. There's a lot of rather mechanical work available there. A great deal of the information necessary in order to make those scholarly judgments is available on the web. We intend to use the power of the computing to take as much of that mechanical work off of our editors as possible in order to speed up the crucial human input function, which is basically making scholarly judgments and recording that accurately on the system. And again, we would anticipate that as this functionality is released in the course of the third phase of the project, we'll see a further increase in the rate at which we can process both the information coming in from users and the large legacy data sets that are being introduced in bulk. The other exciting development on the sort of output side, visualization. The more you think about this data and the more complex the data becomes, the more exciting the possibility of using visualization to interrogate the data, using visualization to help edit the data, using visualization to analyze it and understand the shape of these very large and complex data sets. And I'm happy to report that we'll be joining forces with another one of these sister institutions which have cropped up more or less simultaneously with the Cultures of Knowledge Project. Mapping the Republic of Letters Project in Stanford began with a very, very similar problem, but from the other end. And after a great deal of further development, they now have a very sophisticated visualization tool, Palladio. They have a wonderful design lab which combines humanistic scholarship, IT systems development, and graphic design to bring all the components necessary to work through in a very meticulous and structured way all the problems involved in visualizing data in this kind of a field. They've released Palladio, which is a visualization tool based on much of the development that they've been pursuing over the past 4 or 5 years. So they have a tool and a lab for developing it further, but they need metadata and expanding user community. We have an expanding user community and a growing pool of metadata. We need visualization tools, and we need to tap in also to the kind of expertise they've been developing there. So the idea is we're going to bring these two first fruits of these projects together, but more importantly, we want to get into a kind of symbiotic working relationship with Stanford, so that instead of trying to replicate what they're doing in a rough and ready way, we can assist one another in pushing forward various interconnected aspects of this same overlapping agenda. So that's some notion of where we are as far as phase two, and looking a bit forward to phase three. The problem is, of course, that so many of the design decisions, technical decisions underlying all of this work are growing increasingly near the cutting edge of these fields, and this is why we're moving in already into a new dimension of the project, which is funded by a completely separate grant from COST, the European Cooperation on Science and Technology. Normally, humanists don't get much of a look into this kind of project. We discovered after we were awarded a grant that the chances of success for a humanities project is something like 45-1. There you have it in black and white, reassembling the Republic of Letters 1500 to 1800, a digital framework for multilateral collaboration on Europe's intellectual history. COST doesn't fund research, they don't fund systems development, they don't fund resource creation. What they have given us is some between 600,000 and 700,000 euros over 4 years to build a network to subject every aspect of this project of building transnational digital infrastructure in this field to international scrutiny, but also interdisciplinary scrutiny. So here basically is the COST agenda: to bring together four communities of experts, librarians, archivists, IT experts, and scholars from across and beyond Europe, to think through all aspects of this problem, designing transnational digital infrastructure to allow a whole scholarly community to reassemble data on the early modern Republic of Letters, chronological dimension, geographical, prosopographical, thematic, textual, technical, legal, and financial, and to collaborate on devising solutions and raising funds to execute them. So here we're very clearly going beyond collaborative population of the system, as we have in phase two, collaborative development, as we are, for instance, in partnership with Stanford in the early stages of phase three, but also to collaborative design of the system as well. We currently have 26 partners, a further 3 pending potential members, in virtually every European country. So here's the current geographical state of the project with pending members in orange. It's very difficult to keep up with this, in fact, because every week or so, additional projects are coming on stream. We aim to have pan-European coverage, at least as far as the EU is concerned. Just to give you some indication of the status of the partners, here you have some of the major libraries, and basically we're dealing with national libraries and national academy libraries in Austria, in the UK, in the Czech Republic, in Germany, in Hungary, in the Netherlands, in Denmark, and one of the prime libraries in Sweden as well. In fact, there's several more national libraries which have joined the project in just the last few weeks. So even this slide isn't fully up to date. Well, what do we need to do? Well, we need to examine six areas requiring consensus: chronological and geographical standards, biographical and prosopographical standards, thematic and textual standards, archival and collection standards, technical and legal standards for data exchange, and scholarly standards for data analysis and visualization. So each one of these basic problems is going to be assigned to a separate working group, and each working group assembles relevant experts from across Europe, but also from each of these four scholarly communities: the librarians and archivists, the IT systems developers, and the scholars. This means we have six working groups: space and time, people and networks, texts and topics, documents and collections, data exchange and strategic planning, and visualization and communication. And I'd just like to give you again an impression of the quality of the people that we're involved with here. Space and Time is going to be led by Ian Gregory, professor of digital humanities at the University of Lancaster, who has this wonderful project spot on the topic where we need the most expertise: spatial humanities, texts, GIS, geographic information systems, and places. So he already has a big ERC grant for exploring this, and we're going to be benefiting from a great deal of collaborative thinking on how best to deal with the spatial and chronological dimension of our data by involving him as the chair of one of these six working groups. People and networks, again, we're building on the work which has been going on in the Semantic Computing Research Group, led by Iiro Hyvonen in Aalto University in Helsinki. Extraordinarily bold and interesting experiments on a national scale using the semantic web and linked open data, which is providing a sort of enormous, capacious context, not only for the problem of structuring data on people and networks, but also for creating tools and platforms in which a scholarly community can collaborate in defining the ontologies, defining the relationships central to the data while they're collecting the data at the same time. It's really extraordinarily interesting work that's being done up there. texts and topics, again, these visualizations are giving you some notion of how systems can allow us to make sense of large and complex data sets. In this case, chaired by Charles van den Heuvel, one of the key figures in the Circulation of Knowledge project and their project, the Epistolarium, in the Haukens Institute in the Dutch Royal Library in The Hague. So again, drawing on the enormous amount of work that's already been done there on this supremely difficult problem of topic modeling and text mining large polyglot corpora of letters. That was the fundamental objective of the Circulation of Knowledge project in The Hague. Documents and Collections is being chaired by Elizabeth Ann Boran, librarian at the Worth Library in Dublin, and also that now rare breed, a true scholar librarian. She's been working on years on this project of editing James Usher's correspondence, so somebody who knows this whole area from the library and archival perspective and the scholarly perspective at the same time. Data exchange and strategic planning. Here you have a glimpse at sort of ontology cloud, again, central to the whole open link data model, being led by Thomas Stecker, the deputy librarian at the Herzog August Bibliothek in Wolfenbüttel, the German National Library for 17th century books, responsible also for the Wolfenbüttel Digital Library, with here, for instance, an ongoing project on Johann Valentin Andre's correspondence, someone who was enormously influential for the circles of Hartlib and Comenius. Finally, visualization and communication, six of these work groups, which will be chaired by Paolo Cucciarelli in the Politecnico in Milan, who leads this density design unit, who's already been working with Stanford. In fact, it was graduates of this program who were instrumental in providing the design expertise for the development of the Palladio project. So we're beginning to triangulate with these other projects as well. Stanford has worked with Milan, Stanford has worked with Alto. We're working with both of them. We've all been aware of what's been going on in The Hague. So we're beginning to get overlapping networks of aspiration and expertise now integrated into this cost network so that they can sustain in a much richer and more regular way collaboration with one another. Just to give you a glimpse of the first fruits of our collaboration with Density Design in Milan. They're going to be developing the cost website for us. Here are mock-ups which arrived just about a week ago, indicative, to my mind, of the extraordinary expertise in laying out material visually in such a way that it's the relationships are intuitively obvious. Here again is just a basic mock-up of the front page of the Cost Network's webpage. So that brings us really throughout most of the developments right up more or less to the present day. The only thing which remains to be said is that we're looking forward now beyond phase three and beyond the Cost Network to a means of raising the funding necessary in order to realize this kind of blueprint. In other words, the Cost project now is primarily about scrutinizing what we have been doing in early modern letters online in an international way, in an interdisciplinary collection of expertise, and drawing up a consensual blueprint of the major infrastructure in this field. And the third phase of the Cultures of Knowledge project is designed to work with the Cost project in order to provide all the necessary preconditions for the kind of funding necessary in order to re-engineer the older parts of early modern letters online, re-engineer our data as far as necessary, but more importantly also move forward with this very ambitious agenda of bringing together data from many different fields in increasingly large, many different areas, collections in increasingly large quantities, and homogenizing it, standardizing it, publishing it on a interlinked digital system, and then providing ourselves with the analytical machinery in order to make sense for the first time of these unprecedentedly large collections of data. Fortunately, as it happens, Horizon 2020, the new EU research funding body is focused in no small part on creating transnational digital infrastructure. Cost is now being integrated into the Horizon 2020 funding package, 80 billion euros available until 2020. As I've already suggested, we have one of the very few humanities actions within COST, and one of the very few humanities actions devoted directly to developing digital infrastructure. One of the things Horizon 2020 is particularly concerned about is to ensure that it's not spending its 80 billion euros on creating digital infrastructure which nobody wants to use. So the fact that we also have a growing and very enthusiastic transnational user community emerging in the course of the COST network and already collaborating with cultures of knowledge and early modern letters online should put us in an advantageous position to pursue a really substantial funding from costs necessary in order to start bringing this data together until the before the proliferation of these silos of incompatible data grow so large that the problem of reconciling them and merging them and bringing them together becomes insuperable or at least hugely expensive. So let me just conclude by coming back to where we started summarizing the objectives of the project as a whole in something like these terms. We're aiming now to devise and build collaboratively a scholarly social machine that is a platform for radically multilateral scholarly collaboration in reassembling the scattered documentation on the Republic of Letters, and thereby to harness the potential of the ongoing revolution in digital communication to address the scholarly problems created by the revolution of postal communications in the early modern period. Thank you very much.